Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, alongside Travis Anderson as we get set for National Championship Monday. We've reached the end of the college football season tonight. Alabama and Georgia will go toe-to-toe to crown the top team of the world of college football. We're going to talk about that heavily on the show today. Also, now we are past the wild card round of the NFL playoffs. We know who's going to the divisional set. We're down to the final eight teams in the NFL season, and we're going to talk about that. There were a few surprises, I think, over the weekend, and that's basically what we're going to talk about heavily on the show today. Travis, first off, we'll dive right into it, talk some college football. As far as tonight's national championship goes, and of course, we'll preview it, take a look at an in-depth look at it in just a bit, go over some numbers. But this is the first question I have to ask, and I want your opinion on it, because I went on two other shows today, and I was asked this question, and it never really popped up into my mind. Is an all-SEC national championship tonight good or bad for college football, or does it matter?
I don't think it matters. People love college football. Some don't like the SEC, so they're going to be negative. I think maybe it's 5% that people are probably upset that it's an all-SEC, but to me it doesn't matter. These are the two best teams, I think, that we have playing tonight.
I think so. I thought going into the playoffs that it was Georgia and Clemson. Alabama proved me wrong. I mean, they dominated Clemson in nearly every aspect of the game. Yeah, look, I think people have a problem with the SEC based on the fact that it has been rammed down our throats over the past decade. But the SEC put together an incredible run. They were worthy of the praise that they were receiving. And then they get the contract with ESPN. And of course, everybody watches ESPN, right? So you turn on the television set. Who do you see? You see the SEC. I don't have any doubt in my mind that these are the two best teams in the country. I agree with that 100%. I've said Georgia was going to win the national championship dating all the way back to when they beat Notre Dame and South Bend. I've been that high on this team because I love what they have coming out of the backfield, and I love what they have defensively as well, specifically up front. I'm not surprised Georgia's there. Alabama, I thought they were vulnerable. I thought this was one of the more vulnerable Alabama teams. You know, a 7-point win over Mississippi State, a loss to Auburn, didn't play for the SEC championship. I think they're a little bit more vulnerable than they have been. But I think all the way around, teams have caught up to Bama in one way or another. From a recruiting purpose, it's been more of an even playing field. I mean, you go back and you look at some of the national championship teams that Nick Saban has produced. We knew at the beginning of the season it was going to be very tough for someone to beat Alabama. I didn't get that feel with Bama this year. So, bad for college football? No, it's not bad. And this goes back to the whole conference pride deal. And I'm a Notre Dame guy. You listen to the show enough, you know I'm a Notre Dame guy. And so maybe this is where I just don't understand conference pride. Notre Dame's an independent. And so maybe that's where I've never really understood conference pride, because even when I was a kid growing up, I watched Notre Dame football. Conferences just haven't really ever meant a whole lot to me. I really don't get that. Like, people will wholeheartedly root against the SEC. And, you know, here being in the state of Utah, you look at some of the Pac-12 teams. You fans root for Pac-12 squads when they're in bowl games. You being a USC guy, do you root for UCLA?
No, I don't care anything about the conference or those teams and what they do.
I don't either.
I just care about what USC does. I don't have conference pride. I don't care.
From a fan's perspective, now obviously here on Drive Time Sports, you got to look at things a little bit more clear cut. You have to be unbiased, right? But at the same time, looking at the way things play out from a fan perspective, I've never had conference pride, so it doesn't really bug me tonight that it's an all-SEC national championship, because there were two SEC teams that got into the college football playoff, and realistically, two teams that deserve to. I mean, to me, it was a no-brainer Georgia was there. Yeah, Bama got the benefit of the doubt over Ohio State, but I think they were a better team than Ohio State. So, yeah, look, this is a very reasonable national championship matchup. I have no problem with it being an all-SEC title game. Let me put it that way.
I want the best game and the best two teams, and I think we got that.
I think so. You know, and you can go back to when Alabama faced LSU in the BCS national championship. Different story. Because, again, LSU had to essentially beat Bama twice that year.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case here with Georgia. These two teams didn't play, and then we had a playoff, and they just happened to meet up. They come from opposite sides of the bracket. Look, this is going to be a great game tonight. Alabama is favored by 4, I believe, is what the spread is. I like Georgia to win this game tonight. I've been high on Georgia all season long. I think Kirby Smart gets it done. We'll take a look at this national championship contest by the numbers. That's coming up in just a bit. Outside of that, let's look at what's happening in the National Football League, because it did not take long for the Chicago Bears to get their head coach. Matt Nagy, new head coach of the Chicago Bears, Chiefs offensive coordinator. Your initial reaction to Nagy getting the job?
I think it's a good hire for the Bears, and Bears fans should be excited. He's a good coach, young coach, and with the options out there, I think Chicago did well.
Yeah, I'm happy that in this particular instance, the Bears did not go with a retread.
Yeah.
And what I mean by retread,
yeah,
exactly. I mean, not going with the likes of a Jim Caldwell or a Jeff Fisher or some of the other names that have been floating around out there. I mean, John Fox was a retread hire. When the Bears brought him in, it was a retread hire. He's fresh off of a stint with the Denver Broncos, and now he's with the Chicago Bears, right? That's a retread hire. He goes 14-34, and that's no knock on John Fox. But at the same time, I mean, you look at some of the teams that have had success with coordinators. Nagy's not Sean McVay young. I mean, McVay's only 31 years old, but Nagy's 39. So he is a young guy. Spent the last 10 seasons under Andy Reid, who has produced a really incredible coaching tree. I mean, Todd Bowles, head coach of the Jets, comes from Andy Reid. John Harbaugh comes from Andy Reid's coaching tree. Sean McDermott of the Buffalo Bills. Matt Nagy now. Doug Peterson. Ron Rivera. It's a pretty good coaching tree, and that kind of stuff fascinates me as far as sports go. But the Bears interviewed 5 candidates before meeting with Nagy yesterday. That was the day after they suffered a loss to the Titans. And again, you look at the last 10 years with Andy Reid in Philly and Kansas City. Reid promoted Nagy to the offensive coordinator position this year, so he worked his way up relatively fast. I like the hire for the Bears. It's, again, you mentioned it, thinking outside the box.
Yeah, it's a good hire. So Chicago should be happy. He's a guy who can come in and develop Mitchell Trubisky. Now he's got to get a couple more weapons around him.
Interesting note, Nagy joins Mark Trestman as the only Bears head coach since the merger to have worked as an offensive coordinator. And I think the way this team is set up, we were talking about some of the most desirable coaching jobs out there in the NFL. I was a fan of the Chicago job based on the fact that I like Mitchell Trubisky. I think he's going to be a pretty good quarterback. Very, very raw. You see the potential with Trubisky. And again, you got to remember this kid only started like 13 games in college.
Yeah.
What they have coming out of the backfield, I like it.
The Chicago had to go offensive side with their coach. Yeah, you can't go defensive. So that's what they did. So we'll see how it works out. I like the hire.
I think Jordan Howard's a top 10 running back. Cohen is a perfect complement for him out of that backfield. They're doing good things offensively. I'm with you. They needed to go offense. You got to make sure that you really develop Mitch Trubisky, and that's what Nagy is going to be in charge of, developing Mitch Trubisky. I like the hire. I like it a lot. Some of the other news and notes coming out of the NFL. This was a big story over the weekend. Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots. Do you pay attention to the drama in New England? Is it legitimate? Or is it something along the lines of ESPN trying to sensationalize it? Because if that's the case, they try to sensationalize a lot with the Patriots. Your take, is there trouble brewing in New England?
There might be some trouble brewing, but I don't think it's to the extent that ESPN's going to, because I just don't think you can go this long working in a relationship 18 years and have the success that they had. Of course, you're going to disagree from time to time, but I just don't think there's anything there.
Yeah, I'm iffy on this. Here's the interesting scenario that could possibly play out. Okay, let's think about this for a moment. Jimmy Garoppolo gets dealt. Bill Belichick was not happy about trading Jimmy Garoppolo, and I can see why. Tom Brady's 40 years old, and while Brady will probably win the MVP this year in the NFL, you see signs of slippage. As crazy as that sounds, I know that's a kind of a contradiction, right? This guy's the MVP. You're a Tom Brady guy. you see some slippage in Tom Brady's game. I know you do.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's 40.
He's 40 years old. Of course, there's going to be some slippage, but they got to the point in the season where they felt comfortable enough that they felt Brady wasn't going to get hurt, and they could move on from Jimmy Garoppolo, who turned down the extension for $14 to $16 million. So,
don't blame him. I don't blame him, by the way.
Because he wants to be the man. And Jimmy G looks at it and says, okay, well, Tom Brady's going to play another 2 to 3 years. I don't want to wait behind that. So Bill Belichick said, here's an opportunity where we can get a second-round pick, move him out of the conference instead of to Cleveland, which they could end up with the fourth overall. But Belichick wanted to move him out of the conference. So, and Jimmy G, Bill Belichick threw him a bone and said, here you go.
I don't think he wanted to trade Garoppolo. I really don't. And, you know, maybe this isn't a fair comparison, but remember when the 49ers had to move on from Joe Montana because they had Steve Young waiting?
Yeah.
Tom Brady's going to go down as the greatest quarterback to ever play in this game, but the 49ers did themselves a solid favor by moving on. And again, it was sad. I don't think anyone outside of Chief fans want to remember Joe Montana in a Kansas City Chief uniform, and I get it. But at the same time, I wonder if it's time to do that. I'm wondering in New England, like at the end of the year, would it be time to move on from Tom Brady? It's crazy because the guy's going to win the MVP. I get it, but he's 40 years old. Like, this is such a unique situation in the NFL. It's unique all the way around. Is it a damned if you do, damned if you don't scenario for the Patriots? Yes. I know Brady wants an extension. I don't see this guy playing football till he's 45 years old. I just don't. Is it possible? Sure, it's Tom Brady. But this whole thing, I can understand how feelings and feelings were hurt and creative differences have kind of been a topic in New England behind closed doors. I can see that. Does this mean that Bill Belichick's time in New England is coming to a halt? I don't think so. But it is also important to note that Matt Patricia is now in, he's in line to be the Detroit Lions head coach. They haven't announced it yet, but he's going to be the head coach of the Detroit Lions, right? I mean, that's almost a done deal.
Yes.
Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator for the Patriots, is in line to get a head coaching job. Could have taken a head coaching job last year. He's waiting for the right time. He's going to become a head coach once again in this league. I don't know if it's this offseason. He's patient. Seems to be happy with what he has brewing in New England.
I don't think there's any jobs right now that I would take if I was him. I'd wait it out.
Well, the Bears' job is off the table. The Lions' job is off the table.
Titans is gone now.
Titans is gone. They're not going to move on from Mularkey. I don't know if there's a job that's enticing enough for Josh McDaniels to walk away from New England, knowing that next year we're going to have Black Monday again.
Yeah.
There's going to be a whole new opportunity for someone like a Josh McDaniels to pick his spot. So, but eventually, the point I'm getting at, Bill Belichick's coaching staff, eventually he's not going to want to start over once again. And you're starting over with saying goodbye to Patricia and eventually saying goodbye to Josh McDaniels. And Tom Brady is 40 years old. At what point in time does it become a viable and realistic option for Belichick to at least entertain the idea of going to the New York Giants? They don't have a head coach.
No.
And all this talk about what jobs are open and individuals waiting and picking their spot, the New York Giants have been relatively quiet. And I'm wondering if there's something to the fact that maybe Bill Belichick does in fact go to the Giants. Like, is that a realistic rumor at this point in time?
Wherever there's smoke, there's fire, I guess they say.
To a certain extent, yes.
Yeah, we'll find out what happens. If they win it all this year, maybe Belichick says, I've accomplished enough here. I want to try something new.
Okay, and again, I'm going to go back to Tom Brady here for a moment. And there's so much football left to be played before we really, truly should look at something like this. But it's a big story.
It is. And the Patriots, every time they won the Super Bowl, they've had some controversies.
At some point, yeah.
So now they got a little fuel to their fire coming up this weekend and moving on if they can advance past Tennessee, which they will.
It's the ultimate gut shot to the Patriots organization. And I don't think Tom Brady would do this. But it is possible that if Tom Brady wins another Super Bowl, he's done.
Yeah.
It's possible.
We know his wife doesn't want him to play anymore, so if he goes out back-to-back Super Bowls, finishes with six, he could say, okay, I've done enough, and then the Patriots, though, will be kicking themselves for getting rid of Jimmy G.
Exactly.
They don't have a quarterback.
Exactly, exactly. So, now, there are some interesting storylines with the Patriots. Everyone is hoping on their downfall. I understand it. And again, I know there's a lot of football left to be played before, you know, anything drastic happens. But I think it is worth mentioning. It's a big story right now. Let's move on and talk NBA basketball. Now, tonight, the Utah Jazz are not in action. The next time we see the Jazz on the court, it's actually, they got a couple of days off. I don't think the Jazz return to the court for like the next, they return on Wednesday, actually. So they'll have a day off tonight. Then they return against Washington on Wednesday, which is exactly what the doctor ordered. considering how they lost to the Miami Heat yesterday. But taking a look at the schedule, Milwaukee at Indiana, 5 o'clock start time there. Toronto will travel to meet Brooklyn. We get Houston at Chicago at 6 o'clock. The Cavaliers take on the Timberwolves at 6. We get Detroit at the Pelicans. San Antonio will travel to meet Sacramento at 8 o'clock tonight. Nightcap action, Denver at Golden State, Atlanta at the Clippers. That's a quick check of what's happening in the national sports front. And again, we are off and rolling. Brand new week of Drive Time Sports, National Championship Monday, and we'll throw in some NFL football talk as well. It's all straight ahead.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ron Artest, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan. Listen, you must... say it again. Buscarini? All right. Jordan Buscarini. All right. With Jordan Buscarini. Shout out to Queens, Virginia, right now.
Coming to you live from Price.
Put that cookie down.
Price, Utah.
Now.
Me and my man, Trav. Love Price. Price is awesome.
Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini and Travis Anderson on KOAL AM 750. Eastern Utah's main source for local sporting news.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. KOAL 1073 FM 750 AM. Let's talk college football. Tonight, boy, it's the finale of the season. It's been a fantastic college football season, by the way. It's been great. I mean, you go back and you look at some of the matchups. You look at some of the games that we've had this year. I'm sad to see college football come to a close. Even the bowl games, it gets off to a slow start, and that's typically the case. But going to New Year's Day, I mean, there were some awesome games, including Central Florida and Auburn, the Georgia and Oklahoma games, an instant classic. Alabama was impressive. You had the Notre Dame LSU game on New Year's Day. There were some great games in 2018 already. I'm sad to see it come to an end.
Yeah, tonight, college football, which is my favorite sport, comes to an end, and I think we're going to have a fantastic game. Two best teams going at it. Alabama trying to redeem themselves from last year, losing on the final play with, what, like 3 seconds left against Clemson.
Yeah. Yeah, well, let's talk about it. I mean, right out of the gate, Alabama's going to be favored by 4 points, which is crazy. This was a team that went in the number 4 seed. Georgia went in the number 3. 2 or 3 is pretty interchangeable. But Alabama had to get through the number 1 team of the country, and they did that last week by easily defeating Clemson. Now that we're to the national championship game, and Georgia's 13-1, and they're the SEC champs, and Alabama's 12-1, but they couldn't beat Auburn, so they didn't get a chance to play in the SEC championship. Are you surprised that Alabama comes in the favorite, considering that both losses this year for Bama and for Georgia came at the hands of Auburn?
Yeah, I am a little bit shocked that Alabama's favored tonight. I think Georgia should have been favored. They're not. They can use that as motivation. But yeah, a little bit of a shock that Alabama is the favorite.
Now, even though Georgia is the underdog, and I agree with you. I mean, again, I favor Georgia in tonight's game. Even though that is the case, looking at the betting numbers, Forbes magazine had printed an article today that was talking about the money coming in on Alabama, and I mean, it's overwhelmingly, I think like 80% of the money coming in on this game is working in favor of Alabama. So I'm in the minority, obviously, when I pick Georgia to win this football game, but I'm not moving away from that. I think they're the best team in the country. Here's some interesting notes on the game tonight. Now, Kirby Smart has been fantastic. I mean, really, you look at the leaps and bounds that this program has made since Kirby Smart became the head coach. If Georgia actually beats Alabama tonight, he will become one of 7 active coaches to beat Nick Saban. Isn't that something? That's how many active coaches have beat Nick Saban.
It's incredible.
So he'd actually be number 8. Okay, because Gus Malzahn has beat him. Urban Meyer has beat him. Mark Richt, David Cutcliffe, Ferentz, Dabo Sweeney, and Kyle Whittingham. Those are 7. So he'd be the 8th coach to beat, the 8th active coach to beat Nick Saban. Now, a couple of these guys have done it twice. Gus Malzahn, he did it twice. Urban Meyer beat him twice. Now, this is taking into account what he accomplished at LSU as well. But, you know, Kirby Smart's a guy that knows Nick Saban extremely well. And this is a fun storyline that I don't think gets talked about enough. I mean, we've been focusing on the X's and O's, and rightfully so. But just looking at Kirby Smart and Nick Saban, a lot of history between these two guys.
Yeah, they go way back together. A lot of history, like you said. So it'd be pretty cool if Kirby Smart could get the best of Nick Saban tonight.
It would be. It would be. I mean, Kirby Smart worked for Nick Saban at LSU. while he was in Miami and most recently Alabama. 11 years he worked under Nick Saban. Worked his way up, was a defensive backs coach at LSU, safeties coach in Miami, assistant coach and the defensive backs coach, and then the defensive coordinator for Alabama. And he held that title for about 8 years. During his time, he was pretty important to this Alabama team, developing a defensive juggernaut, and he's almost done that in Georgia. Now, we'll talk about Sony Michel and we'll talk about Nick Chubb. Together, these two are the most prolific duo in college football history out of the backfield. But when you look at the numbers statistically, especially in scoring defense, Alabama comes in at number one, and again, what they did last week against Clemson, off the charts impressive. I mean, that was insanely good, what they did to Clemson. But Georgia comes in at number five. And there's one guy on this list, or on this Georgia defense, that is so instrumental to the success, and that's why Georgia's on that top five list. And that's Roquan Smith, who was so good against Georgia, or against Oklahoma, excuse me. I know Oklahoma scored a lot of points in that game, but there were times in that second half where Roquan actually, he willed that Georgia defense. I mean, he single-handedly came up with massive stops. Georgia's a fun team defensively. Now, don't look at the Oklahoma game as an indication of what could happen tonight, because for as good as Alabama is offensively, they don't pack the punch that Oklahoma does offensively. They just don't. No. Jalen Hurts is not Baker Mayfield.
He's not. He's the guy that's going to slow the tempo down, where Baker Mayfield's up there, you know, no huddle, they're going quick, and he's just going to slow it down. So, yeah, Alabama offensively is just not on the same level as Oklahoma.
No, they're not. They're not. And then again, I mentioned Sony Michel and Nick Chubb. And again, this is the most terrific duo in college football history. They smashed the career record of the Pony Express, Eric Dickerson and Craig James. That was all the way back in the 80s. They rushed for 8,259 yards since arriving together on campus. And they were unbelievable in the Rose Bowl. 326 yards, 5 touchdowns off of 25 carries. Now again, I just mentioned a moment ago how you can't really look at what Oklahoma did to Georgia's defense because Jalen Hurts is not Baker Mayfield and Alabama doesn't pack the same punch, and they don't. But at the same time, I'm looking at these numbers of Michelle and I'm looking at them from Nick Chubb last week. Again, 25 carries for 326 yards and 5 touchdowns. I get it. The same logic applies here. Alabama's much better defensively than Oklahoma is. Something's got to give in this game.
Yeah, and we go back to Nick Saban against former assistants, undefeated all time.
He doesn't lose.
Yeah, he's 11-0. He beat Derek Dooley. He's 3-0. Point differentials plus 31. If you go back, Jimbo Fisher, 1-0, plus 17. Will Muschamp, 2-0, plus 24. So he's blowing these guys out when he gets an opportunity to face his former coaches. So it's going to be interesting. Defensively, Georgia's going to have to score a touchdown, I think, off a defensive touchdown early on. I think that's the key. I think the Georgia defense is the key.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, but maybe it's because I'm coming in from a different logic. I agree that Georgia's defense is going to be key tonight, but that's because Alabama's biggest asset could be clock control tonight.
Yeah.
Okay, keep Nick Chubb, keep Sony Michel, keep Jake Fromm, who, again, if Michel and Chubb can develop something early, the game's easy for Fromm. And we can't forget that Jake Fromm is a freshman quarterback in this game. He was playing high school football last year. Not a redshirt freshman. He's a true freshman. He's performed under the lights. I mean, his first start was a primetime game against Notre Dame on the road. He gets a win.
Yeah, he can't get rattled in the big stage, big moment tonight. And I just don't think that kid will. That's one thing. Will he be rattled early on in this game with the national championship?
Yeah, I think he's going to be okay because, again, you got this duo in the back. But again, if Michel and Chubb can get rolling early, the game is going to be so much easier for Fromm. But going back to it, if you're Alabama's defense, and again, they are run stoppers, okay? Alabama's rushing offense has been fantastic, but on the ground, they have also been fantastic. This game's going to be one in the trenches. If you can find a way to limit Michel and Chubb early, I don't know if a freshman quarterback can beat Alabama, but I don't think they can stop Chubb and Michel. I mean, I would be stunned tonight. I think between these two guys, they can eclipse the 200-yard mark. And if they do that, Georgia's in good shape. I mean, if these two guys can combine to eclipse 200 yards on a defense that's pretty stout. The best defense for Alabama tonight is Jalen Hurts controlling the offense and keeping Georgia's offense off the field. That's the best defense that Alabama could have tonight.
And Jalen's shown that he will throw a couple picks that he shouldn't make or fumble the football. So that's where it comes back on Georgia's defense, where they can force Jalen to make a turnover and to capitalize off that with the run game.
I think he's been pretty good as of late. I mean, he's matured a lot. This kid is a lot better than what he once was last season. But to make it easier on Jalen Hurts, this kid is very effective when he gets outside of the pocket. And looking at his stats against Clemson, very good defensive team, he was nearly perfect in that game. He was 16 of 24, 120 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks. That's what Jalen Hurts does when Alabama wins football games. Now, with that being said, you look at what Bama has on the ground. I mean, Damian Harris and Bo Scarborough. Scarborough had 12 carries in the game against Clemson. He was limited to just 24 yards. And if you go back to what Scarborough did last year, just how important he was to Alabama, they probably beat Clemson if they have a healthy Scarborough.
Yeah, I'm with you. If he's healthy, there's no doubt they win that game.
But this season, it's been a different type of Scarborough. He's kind of underachieved based on the expectations that I had from him. But Alabama does have a three-headed monster on the ground. I would expect Jake Fromm. I'm going to expect tonight for Georgia to win this game. I'm going to just throw this out there. If Michelle and Chubb can go over the 200-yard mark, that means that at some point in time in this game, Fromm will eclipse the 200-yard mark through the air because it's going to open things up on the outside. If that happens, there's no question Georgia wins. In fact, I like Georgia to score, I'm going to say 27-21 Georgia. I like them to get the win tonight. I think, again, this is all based on Alabama's inability to slow down Chubb and Michelle, because if they do that, that's Alabama's key to victory. I mean, if you can keep this offense, on the ground, I guess at bay is the word I'm looking for. But I don't think they do it. I think Michelle and Chubb go for over 200 yards. I think Fromm throws for 200 yards. He plays a near perfect game and Georgia gets the win. That's what I'm going with tonight.
Going Alabama. I think Alabama wins the game. I think they rebound from last year's loss in the national championship and win the game 35-28.
Don't forget it's a 72-mile trip for Georgia.
Yeah, home game.
It's a home game. I mean, 72-mile trip.
Yeah, and that goes all in favor of Georgia. Just like Alabama, I'm not going to pick against Nick Saban.
As far as Alabama goes, I think it's like a 200-mile drive. So, I mean, it's close proximity for both of these two squads. But, I view it as nearly a home game for the Georgia Bulldogs. That bodes in their favor as well. Kirby Smart's the guy to do it. I'm sticking with Georgia. I think they get it done tonight. We've talked about the rushing attacks. We talked about quarterback play. I'll tell you who we did not talk about. And again, if we're talking Jake Fromm and what kind of a game he's going to have, because he did go over 200 yards against Oklahoma, 20 of 29. I think that's a perfect performance for Jake Fromm. On the outside, the one playmaker you have to be aware of, it's Javon Wims for Georgia. Wims is a stud. And when Michelle and Chubb are clicking up front, this guy becomes a viable option on the outside.
Yeah, a little X factor for them. So it's going to be a fun game. Really, both teams are pretty evenly matched.
Both deserve to be there.
Both deserve to, yeah. Two best teams. I have no problem with both these teams making it, both of them being in the playoff, and looking forward to a fantastic game tonight.
We're split. I'm going to say Georgia 27, Bama 21.
Got Alabama.
What's the score?
35-28.
Close game. Yeah, it comes down to the wire. I think it does. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we're going to move over to talk NFL football. That's up next.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Even with the college football national championship taking place tonight, plenty of NFL football to talk about as well. We have to kind of rehash some of the stuff that went down over the weekend with the wild card round. And on Saturday, we had the Chiefs inexplicably blowing an 18-point lead against the Tennessee Titans at home, falling 22-21 in a game that most certainly saved Mike Mularkey, saved his job in Tennessee. I mean, let's just be honest. This guy is done, regardless of the fact that they went to the playoffs this year. They found a way to back into the playoffs. Mularkey is done if they lose this game. And then we had the Atlanta Falcons beat the Rams in L.A., and they did it 26-13 in a game that was highly entertaining.
Very entertaining. The Rams, a couple mistakes with not filling the punt and then fumbling the kickoff, really hurt their chances in that game because they pinned Atlanta back three times. Atlanta had three drives that started from the 10 and had nothing going offensively, couldn't muster anything up, and they catch a couple breaks there, take advantage, and it never seemed like the Rams could get into a flow offensively.
You know, in this game, I mean, Atlanta, I believe they punted out of their own end zone four times.
Yeah.
And still found a way to get a win. Matt Ryan was great in this game. Did everything right. The field was slick. I mean, it's a new field since the USC-UCLA game to put a new field in. And it was a little bit slippery. The Falcons found a way to make plays. I thought Jared Goff was okay in this game. Didn't throw an interception. He was okay. Sean McVay, to me, in this game for the Rams and the Falcons. And Sean McVay's great. I love McVay. I think McVay panicked a little bit too early and went away from Todd Gurley. And there's a correlation to what happened in the Rams game compared to what happened at the Chiefs game. And we're going to talk about the Chiefs game here in just a moment. But he panicked, went away from Todd Gurley. Gurley eclipsed the 100-yard mark, was very good in this game, did not get into the end zone, relied heavily on the passing attack. There was one specific instance in this game where the Rams had Atlanta backed up. The Rams were in the... I believe that they were at the 5-yard line. It was second and goal from the 5-yard line. McVay throws on second, third, and fourth down. This guy's a terrific play caller. He's been terrific all year long, but Gurley didn't touch the ball inside the 5. And I had a problem with that. And so while, you know, there's the talk about experience, and Atlanta has loads of it, and Atlanta's a very good football team, and I've said for weeks on this show, whoever gets Atlanta in the first round of the playoffs, they're going to have their hands full. Because this is an experienced team with Matt Ryan, with an evolving playbook with Steve Sarkisian, who is finally pushing the right buttons. And he has now over the last couple of weeks as offensive coordinator. You take a look at that secondary. They're pretty good. Atlanta's got a pretty good secondary. And Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman is a dynamic duo out of the backfield. Whoever runs into Atlanta is going to have their hands full. And the Rams most certainly had their hands full. And we could talk about what McVay did or didn't do in this game and how Goff did or didn't play. The Rams' defense was pretty good. Farrell Cooper, who is a Pro Bowl returnman, struggled. He fumbled twice on kickoffs and then had the punt problem that netted Atlanta 83 yards in this game. Looking at all things considered, Atlanta looked more composed throughout this entire game. Experience was a factor. McVay can say whatever he wants. Experience was a factor in this Ram-Falcon game.
Yeah, you could tell. The experience at Atlanta was calm and poised. They didn't panic. It seemed like the Rams kind of panicked a little bit. And Gurley has to have more touches than 14, especially inside the 5. Give the guy the ball because he's a potential MVP candidate. And
legitimately, yes.
Yeah, and he has to touch the ball inside the 5 because he's going to score.
I agree. Now, with that being said, Gurley wasn't great in this game either. I mean, he dropped a couple of passes out of the backfield. But I'll tell you, it was great to have football, playoff football in L.A., and the fans showed up in droves in that game. All in all, though, it's set up for Atlanta. That was a tough win for the Falcons. They had to play great football, and they did. They did exactly what they needed to do to win. It's 13-10 at halftime, Atlanta. The Rams have the momentum because they score on back-to-back drives. What does Atlanta do? They quiet the crowd, which was in a frenzy, methodically move the ball down the field, they get a field goal. Okay, the Rams offense comes out, and they had been on the sideline for a really long time. I mean, Atlanta took a lot of time off of that clock, and the defense allows the Rams to move the football, but they play the bend but don't break rule, and they get the ball back, they go down, they kick another field goal, it's a two-possession game. I mean, it was a perfectly played game by Atlanta on the road. Now, by the Falcons knocking off the Rams, they have a fairly easy road. I mean, I'm writing off Philadelphia. I have since Carson Wentz went down. And the Falcons have Philadelphia on the road. And look, they're a 3-point favorite for a reason. This is a much more simple road for the Atlanta Falcons. I think there's a great chance that Atlanta goes back to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like Atlanta this weekend against Philadelphia. I don't trust Philadelphia. And then you got the Saints and the Vikings in that other matchup. And I think the way it's turning out, I wouldn't be shocked if Atlanta, as the 6th seed, makes it back to the Super Bowl.
Very possible. I mean, it's very, very possible. Because as great as Minnesota is, and even though they would have the home field, I just don't trust a Case Keenum-led team.
I pick Matt Ryan. And you always go with the better quarterback.
You do. For the most part, you do. And I know you were high on the Rams. You've been high on the Rams all year long. I was cautiously optimistic about that team. I don't know if I need to start giving Case Keenum more credit, but look, midway through the season, he was playing good football, and there was still the legitimate topic of should he be playing or should it be Teddy Bridgewater? And when a kid is playing lights out, when a guy is playing lights out, it doesn't matter what level of football we're talking about here. Look, Jake Fromm was not the original starter for Georgia. He's played so well, Kirby Smart had no choice but to stick with his true freshman because he has played that well. He took over that position from injury. I just don't have the same faith in Case Keenum as a lot of other pundits do. I think things have set up beautifully for Atlanta. They had to get that win against the Rams on the road, obviously. It's a tough battle. I didn't think they would win. They found a way to do so, and now they're set up. Now, I said there was a correlation here because the Rams were trying to play from behind, and that's why Sean McVay went away from the rushing attack. Even though it was a two-possession game, the Rams still had time. They still had timeouts. I think you can utilize the run in that position. They didn't do it. McVay went away from it. Andy Reid in the Kansas City-Tennessee game. Why in the world was this guy not feeding Kareem Hunt?
I have no clue why they went away from that and put the ball in Alex Smith's hands, let him throw where the clock's stopping and you're giving Tennessee possessions with time still. You just got to utilize the clock, run that, because then you're limiting Tennessee's time with the football, and they didn't do that.
I'm blown away by the fact that Kareem Hunt had 5 carries in the second half, 11 carries for the game, 11 carries, 42 yards. That's what they got out of Kareem Hunt. And, you know, there's a fine line between analytics in sports in general. I know basketball is really, really moving towards analytics. I get it. It doesn't take an analytic genius to figure out that Kansas City is at their best when Kareem Hunt is playing quality football. Go back and look at when this team was winning in the regular season and when they went into their slump. You got to give this guy touches. You have to. And when you have an 18-point lead in the second half, I know that there was some questionable officiating in this game. I get that. But to me, this is an obvious coaching, it's a coaching error.
It is.
You just give the ball to Kareem Hunt in the second half. I mean, not every play. Look, I'm not saying every single play you got to give it to Hunt, but you have to utilize this guy more than 5 handoffs, 5 carries in the second half.
Yeah, and that's why changes are coming to Kansas City. You have to have some changes there. Maybe Andy Reid needs to go because this is the second time that he's blown a game in the playoffs like this in this fashion. And maybe you just need to move on and get a fresh start in Kansas City.
Yeah, it's tough to say that because, I mean, Kansas City has definitely performed well under Andy Reid in the regular season. I think he's gone to the playoffs 3 out of the last 4 years. I mean, they've performed well in the regular season. But, man, that is a gut punch if you're a Kansas City Chief fan. There's no reason why Kansas City should not be going to Foxborough this weekend. No reason at all.
Another home playoff loss. Haven't won a home playoff game since 94.
Joe Montana was the quarterback.
Yes. Man, last year was a stinker against Pittsburgh where they got, 12 points? And then this lead, the 21-3 lead, just, it's gut-wrenching if you're a Chiefs fan.
Oh, it is. It is. And again, I point to Andy Reid. I think he outthought himself in this game. Mike Mularkey outcoached Andy Reid in the wild card round. Think about that. Mike Mularkey, who was coaching for his job, he's like 20-something games under 500 as a head coach. I thoroughly believe that he outcoached Andy Reid in this game. And because of it, the Chiefs season has come to a close. Give the ball to Kareem Hunt. Now, outside of those two games, I really wasn't surprised by anything that happened on Sunday. I did pick Carolina to beat New Orleans, but I thought that game could have went either direction. I didn't think, it's very difficult to beat a good team 3 times. Statistically, it's proven, I think out of the 14 times it's happened where you've played a team 3 times, counting a playoff game, I think that team has won like 9 out of the 14 or something like that, the team that swept the series. I get it, like odds say it's favorable, but at the same time, that NFC South was so closely knit. I mean, Atlanta was the 3rd team in that division to go to the playoffs with a 10-6 record. Think about that for a second. Cam Newton and the Panthers have the ability to put up points, and the Panthers had their chance to win that game. In fact, at the end of that contest, we're sitting there watching this game together, Cam Newton put the ball exactly where it needed to be for Devin Funchess.
Yeah, Devin Funchess has to catch that.
Maybe. It was right there for him.
Right there. A perfect pass in that on 3rd and whatever it was, 20, and he lays a ball perfectly, and Funchess just doesn't even move, really just sticks his hands out. And that's where Carolina's season comes to an end. And you're in a fourth down situation, and that's a wrap. So, yeah, it's tough to go into New Orleans, dig yourself a hole, and come back like that. And Cam played well. I thought Cam put guys in positions to where they could succeed, and they didn't come through.
Yeah, rarely am I going to come to the defense of Cam Newton, but I thought Cam Newton, for the most part, played pretty well in this game. I mean, he was 24 of 40 for 349 yards and two touchdowns. Didn't have an interception. I think Cam was pretty good in this game. Rushed for another 37 yards. He did everything he could for Carolina to get a win in this game.
Yeah, he did.
They didn't lose because of Cam Newton.
No. And if you're a Panther fan, you're upset because that's a game yesterday where you played well enough to win.
Well, absolutely. And when you look at the final statistics of Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram, combining for 55 total yards out of the backfield. You got to win that game. Cam did not throw an interception in this contest, threw for over 300 yards, and Carolina managed to hold Kamara and Ingram to 55 combined yards, and they didn't win. And Kamara, who, if you play fantasy football, you know exactly where I'm going with this. He's an up-and-down type player because he scores on big plays. And he only had one catch out of the backfield in this game. That was it.
Yeah, if Carolina wins this game against New Orleans, they're going to the Super Bowl.
There's a good chance of it.
Yeah, I think that would be the team in the NFC to beat at that point, but now it's New Orleans.
They limited the big plays. You look at the big scores outside of the 80-yard pass to Ted Ginn, which, again, that was not Alvin Kamara. Carolina did exactly what they needed to do in this game, and they could not get the win. Drew Brees is pretty good, and that Saints defense is pretty good, and that's why a lot of people have picked them to go to the Super Bowl. But wow, that was a fun game. And then on the flip side, we had Buffalo and Jacksonville, and Jacksonville's a team that I say is very squirrely. You got to keep an eye on them. They're a dark horse. They're a wild card team. Buffalo just, what a boring game, right? I mean, I like defensive football.
But that was that probably set football back 20 years. That was bad.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
That was a bad game. Two quarterbacks who really struggled in the game defensively.
Yeah, they struggled.
Jacksonville.
You're right. I don't mean to cut you off, but you're right. It wasn't necessarily great defensive play as much as two quarterbacks struggling throughout that contest.
Yeah, it's two quarterbacks who aren't very good. They're average quarterbacks in this league, and that's what you got was an average game. Jacksonville being at home got a late touchdown, advanced 10-3.
It's a quick NFL recap. Plenty more NFL talk coming up this week. Plenty more. We get down to the final eight teams. We got a break again for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll come back, put the final touches on this edition of the show.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750 with Jordan Buscarini. Yeah, running down a dream.
Back to close out this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports. Ran a little bit late today on a couple of segments. Plenty to talk about. And of course, we'll be recapping the college football playoff tomorrow here on the show. Tonight, national championship game, 6 o'clock kickoff for Alabama and Georgia. It's your last chance. You want to switch up your pick?
No, roll Tide.
I got to roll with Georgia. I think Georgia gets the win tonight. 27-21. Excellent game in store for us, at least we hope, all SEC National Championship. And we'll talk about that tomorrow, and we'll continue to talk NFL football. Plus, we'll have more local sports coming your way tomorrow. There's a lot happening in this local area, I know that for sure, between wrestling and basketball and swimming and everything else. Local sports scene getting ready to kick back up. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Enjoy the National Championship. We'll catch you tomorrow. We are out.